Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This hard-hitting show discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, everyone, and good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Good evening, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm doing good, too. How's the weather in Florida?
Weather's nice, breezy, crazy hot. No complaints. Wintertime may be here, and I'm very glad of it for winter.
Well, winter in Florida is, what, 78 degrees?
Yeah, it just goes a few notches. That's it.
And a few of the mosquitoes die. That's called winter in Florida.
Of course, never. Mosquitoes seem to always
be hovering over the state. But anyway, tonight we're really excited because we have a special friend of ours here. And her name is Dolly, and I'm going to get Dolly online with us. Also, if anybody has any questions or comments, feel free to call us. I'll give you our call-in number. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll repeat that, area code 646-716-4893. Okay, so I'm going to see if we can get Dolly on with us. Is that you, Dolly?
That is, Bonnie. How are you tonight?
Good. I'm on here. Misty's here, too.
Oh, hi,
Dolly.
Misty.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
So, Dolly, thank you so much for joining us. I was really excited because, you know, a number of women have written to me about how much your story has moved them. And Dolly was one of our contributors to the new book of Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Part 2, Volume 2. And I think that Dolly had a story that's really going to hit a lot of women. In fact, I have three women who specifically wrote to me to listen to you tonight, Dolly, because they're what we call military wives.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe you could, in your own words, tell a little bit about your story, how you met your husband to start with, and then we'll move from there.
I met my husband from his sister, actually. I had a temporary job at Fort Lewis, Washington, and many years ago it was key punching. And I was in between jobs, and I took this summer job. I met her, and then she introduced me to her brother, who was a first lieutenant. Maybe he was a second lieutenant then. I think he was second lieutenant, brand new, right out of nav school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a navigator on the C-130. And so we started dating.
How much year was this?
I'm sorry?
What year was it when you met?
We met in a long time ago, we married in 1979. I think we had known each other almost about a year and a half before we got married.
Okay. So I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead. Are you there, Dolly?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I thought you scared me. Because sometimes I'm on my cell phone, and sometimes it cuts out.
That's okay. No, I said, I'm sorry. I just wanted to give people a time context, so you can keep going.
Okay, so, yeah, that's how we met. And then we got married in 1979. And he had already bought a house in the area right near my parents. And we lived in that house for about a year, and then he got orders for Germany, Rhein-Main Air Base in Germany, which now is closed. Anyway, he was a 130 nav at Rhein-Main in Germany for about 2 years. And our daughter was born there in 1984. And it was just, you know, it was just odd right from the get-go. I couldn't put my finger on it. What was different about him? It was just that, you know, I had seen others. They were, you know, playing kneesies and, you know, handsies and all that kind of stuff, but the playful love stuff, and it was never there with us. He had a BA in chemistry, a bachelor of science would be in chemistry, and he just seemed smart, just too above the playful stuff. So I just thought, okay, that he's just not that way, you know.
Right.
And,
it wasn't necessarily tipping you off that he was gay, right?
No. It's just personality difference. So, you know, just go along with that. And then
was he attentive to you in the beginning?
In the beginning, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it would come and go, really. We had some great times in Germany. We did a lot of traveling. We went to Belgium, and we went to a bunch of castles around Germany and just had a great time. And he seemed to be okay on and off, you know, but once in a while there's a little window that comes in there that just was odd. And one of the odd things was we had been married. It was 1983, so 79, 80, about 4 years. And he decided, well, it's time to have a child. And I remember in the apartment in Germany, he just walked down the hall one day and just says, well, I think it's time we have a child now, a baby. So, and that was it. He didn't even look at me. He just had decided. That was the beginning of the narcissist.
Well, how about, like, up until that time, you were married for 5 years, right?
Yes.
Before you were even pregnant. And how was your sex life during that time?
I remember when, just before I had the baby, it was about the time my water broke, almost just before that. I remember just walking in, to the bedroom, he was lying there, and I just said, I love you. And he said, uh-huh.
You knew that was a problem, right?
Yeah. But, you know, it just wasn't conscious.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of chalk it up to him being him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was never a conscious thing. It was always on an underlying level. That if someone would have snapped their fingers and said, hey, look, this is not right, I would have said, yeah. But when you're living it, you just kind of accept the status quo as the way it is. That's the way it is. And I don't understand that, but that's just kind of how you, maybe it's your psyche trying to deal with whatever you have to deal with and making the best of whatever it is.
Well, sometimes you think people have different personalities.
Yeah.
Emotional and he's not really, you know, the warm, fuzzy type, but, you know, that doesn't mean that he doesn't love me in his own way, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's what I kind of thought. And then he would throw out, like I said, once in a while he'd just throw out stuff where you think, what does he mean by that? Like the one time, just out of the blue, he says, there isn't anything I wouldn't do for my sister. And I thought then, well, there's probably nothing I wouldn't do for my brother either.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was strange that he would just verbalize that. And then I'm thinking, well, he probably feels the same way about me because he married me, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you just carry on. But for some reason, after I found out he was gay, I just did a take back of everything I could remember him ever saying, and then realizing that he never did love me.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the only thing that I know he told the truth about was that he didn't love me. when he asked for the divorce, he says, "I don't love you, and I never have." And I believe that was about the only thing he actually said that was truth.
Mm-hmm. So you had a very hard marriage, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And because of the moving around, I mean, you know how stressful it is whenever you move, but you do that about every other year on average. And that coupled with his arrogant air and verbal and emotional abuse and, you know, no help with the kids. And it was hard. It was just a real hard life with him.
Mm-hmm. And you moved away for a while, right, together?
Oh, we moved all kinds of places.
All through the world, practically.
Well, we started out in Germany for 2 years, and then he got stationed at Pope Air Force Base in North Carolina. He was an instructor NAV there. And then from there we went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. And then we went to Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque. He worked for Alphatech there, Air
mm-hmm.
Force Operational Test and Evaluation Center. And he was a navigator for 10 years, and then he became a logistician.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lived in Albuquerque for probably about 10 years, long time, longest
that
place
is a long
we ever planted. And then he all of a sudden one day just said, "We're going to Saudi Arabia." And, well, actually, you know what he said? No, the way he verbalized it to me was, I have been ordered to go to Saudi Arabia. Now, you and the kids can stay in the house here, but I'll be gone for about 2 years. And I looked at him, and I go, "What?" I said, "How could you say that? How could you say that you'll be gone for 2 years?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "That's not good for us. It's not good for the family. It's not good for the kids." And so I said, I think we as a family should go. And so very few things have I ever said that he backed down to, and that was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, thinking back all those years, I think that was the only time that whatever I said happened. And so all of us went to Saudi Arabia, and then we were there only 1 year, and the bombs went off. Riyadh, where we lived in Riyadh, there was a car bomb that killed 5, and then sometime later Dahran had a bombing that killed 19 service members. And so the two-star general there just decided to evacuate the families. So the kids and I, you know, my mom and dad had passed away. And I had at the time a sister who lived near Chicago, but I didn't want to spend a year in Chicago. And by
you know
now
what?
My ex...
Mm-hmm. Dahlia, can you mention a little bit about, you know, the time when your parents were so ill and how he totally alienated you during that time from your parents?
Yeah, my mom had a liver tumor, and she went to live with my sister in Illinois. And my sister cared for her for many months. And then one day, my sister called and said, "You had better come because mom's going downhill pretty quick."
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Okay." My Larry, it was my ex-husband's name. He was gone at the time on some kind of test. They do play war tests, you know, and he was gone on that. And that's during a time when they play war that family members are not allowed to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called the major, who was his boss, and I told him that my mom was near death, and I needed to talk to him. And I thought, well, I needed to ask, you know, like, what about the dog? What about the house? how am I going to get from North Carolina to Illinois, and should I fly, should I drive, you know, and just kind of go over those kind of things with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he put me through to Larry, and I said, you know, my mom's near death, and I needed to call you to find out, you know, what to do about these things. And he said, well, so what do you want me to do about it? And, wow. I was like, what do you say? After that, what do you say?
Exactly. So, I mean, it was never really, even in your early days, a marriage that was lighthearted and fun. Am I right on saying that?
Yes, for the most part when we were in Germany, because we did a lot of traveling and we did some fun things. They had folks marches and we went on 5K walks through the woods. And it's just a wonderful place, Germany. We had so much fun there. So I think there was no stress there, and so that's probably why. However, I did find out that Frankfurt had a red light district.
Right.
And he actually even told me that he went down there just to look at X-rated movies.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
And so I said, well, don't do that. I don't go in down there. That's not a good place to go, and I don't want you looking at X-rated movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't say anything. He said, maybe he said okay or something like that, kind of to think. Make me think like he won't do it now.
Right.
But there was one night when he was gone, it was 2 or 3 in the morning, right in the middle of my sleep, and the phone rang and I answered it, and it was 2 giddy German women asking for him by name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. Why was I so naive? I was just thinking, well, maybe they ran the place, you know, and want to know where he was. Maybe he became a regular there. I don't know.
Well, I think that, you know, we don't want to ever believe the worst, that we're involved in something that's so devious. So I think it's human nature not to want to, you know, jump on things when they don't necessarily lead to anything.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's a lot of, maybe your head just doesn't want to go there, you know?
I think you're right. What do you think about that, Misty? Are you there, Misty? I wonder if we lost Misty. But, oh, hold on 1 second. Let's see if we can get Misty back. Are you there, Misty?
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
We hear you fine.
Okay, good. I was talking away. What do I think about that? I think that we really deny a lot of things, and it's a major form of self-preservation. I think we have in our head what the marriage should be and could be, even though in reality it's not, but that's how
mm-hmm.
we're playing along to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so difficult to wrap our head around something such as a husband possibly being gay, even though, like Dolly, really stuck a chord with me when she said, you know, she knew something was wrong but just couldn't quite put her finger on it. I think a lot of us feel that way, that we know it's something, but we don't know just what that something is. And lots of times we're so naive to things that they're capable of doing. We wouldn't imagine in a million years that the people that we marry and we love would do such things.
Yeah, and you know what,
do.
Funny, towards the end, he really got what I thought was stupid. I thought he was not really going insane, but I thought he was just going stupid. The reason I say that is because I would be in his truck very, very seldom. He would drive me somewhere. Normally, I always drove him somewhere. But on the occasion that he was the driver, he would go through stop signs, and he would like almost go through a red light if I didn't say, that's a red light, stop. You know, and then I thought, what's the matter with him? And then around home, like even today, my son said, you know, before he went off with Steve, he was going kind of stupid. I said, I know. I said, how do you mean? And he said, well, like he would be sitting at his desk, and towards the end, I would say, you know, Dad, you know, and I would expect, my son said, I would expect to say Dad 3 or 4 times to get his attention, to snap him out of whatever world he was in.
It was, you know, really beyond belief to me. I mean, but you can keep going on with your story. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So you have the 2 children now, right?
Yes. Well, that where we leave off, I forget where we left off. We were in Germany, and then we came back, North Carolina, and Mark was born. There's 6 years difference between my son and my daughter, and I had Mark in 1990, and it was more, he was gone for the year before I got pregnant, and came back on a 6-week visit, and I was sure that that was his idea, was just to get me pregnant while he was home. The first time he said, I think we should have a baby, and then the second time, I don't think he just said anything. He just, you know, had sex and every day for, you know, the few weeks he was home, and it was like, that was just strange in and of itself. But I thought, well, he was gone for months, maybe, you know, that's normal. So anyway, so I had Mark in 1990, and I had postpartum depression.
Uh-huh.
I had my thyroid. It just made me exhausted. I was just a walking zombie, because you couple a thyroid out of whack and postpartum depression and not enough and sleep deprivation, because I was nursing him and every 2 hours, day and night. And I got to the point where I thought that, I don't know what a breakdown is, but I think I had one. Because I still remember in the middle of the night nursing my son, and it was around Christmas time, and I would look at the Christmas tree with all little ornaments on it. And you know what came into my head? I wanted to get a baseball bat and smack every ornament on that tree with it.
Aww.
And I'm
well,
sure that was
to that the point where, you know, you just lose a little perspective, and, you know, you're just
Yeah, I mean, I was getting no love and attention or affection at home, and it was constant with kids and nursing and not feeling right. And, you know, I thought, well, I should go to the doctor. But then I immediately talked myself out of it, because I thought, well, that was stupid. If I had enough time to go to the doctor, I would rather have a nap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I needed a nap first. I needed to get some sleep. And I was not going to trade that for time going to the doctor.
Well, I think a lot of times when you get that exhausted, it's hard to keep a perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Being deprived of sleep, you know, your thought patterns are way off.
Oh, and then my ex started getting, of course, you know, he needed something to do, because I was so busy with the baby and my daughter. Not that he could help me, of course, like vacuum or do the dishes or make a meal. No, he had to go out to movies, which, by the way, I found a condom in his jacket pocket when I was pregnant with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I still didn't think gay. So I caught him, you know, I found it, and I said, what's this? Oh, well, I just use that I go down and look at those X-rated movies, and I jerk myself off, and I use the condoms to catch the mess. You know what? How stupid. I believed him.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't beat yourself up. There's plenty of stupid women like us out there, including me. I'm putting us together.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So then he decided to take up hot air ballooning while I was gone. I had a brand new baby at home. He's moved, well, he went off for 2 weeks to North Dakota to get hot air balloon instruction. And he came home and started going ballooning every weekend, getting up at 4:30 in the morning. And, of course, I would wake up and his friends would come over and meet him and then come back at 2 or so, and then he could go lay down and take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, it was never very much help to you, right?
Oh, no, none. No. Matter of fact, we lived in a gated community then, and when Mark was a baby, I would take him in the stroller to the park, and sometimes the dad would be there with other kids.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I would chat with them, and it was like, I'm the only one who ever took our kids to the park. And so I realized that, and I came home, and I said, you know, there's other dads that take their kids to the park. Oh, you think so? I should take the kids to the park. I said, well, yeah, I would like a break once in a while. That was all that was said.
Unbelievable. So he had really very little compassion, correct?
No, none whatsoever. It was always him, and, you know, if you had any complaint at all, and he would say how hard it is for him instead, and just not acknowledge anything.
How about after your son was born, was there much going on in the bedroom?
No, he decided that was the end of sex altogether, was after Mark was born.
Uh-huh.
That was it. Yeah, nothing was said, but I just knew. And really, to tell you the truth, you talk about the other ladies who, you know, practically beg for sex from their husband, but you know what? In my case, I was glad. I was
uh-huh.
really glad there was no more sex, because you know what? When someone verbally and emotionally abuses you,
right?
I didn't want any piece of that. I didn't want sex from a person who treated me like he did.
Right. Yeah,
and so that's why I thought it was all my idea with the no sex.
You know, the thing is that to me, sex in a marriage should be an act of love between two people, an act of passion, compassion, mutual satisfaction. It shouldn't just be a relieving, you know, function for the man to get himself off or just to, you know, placate.
Mm-hmm.
He won't be saying that he's gay, you know, so just to keep up for appearance's sake. But a lot of these guys, you know, this is what they do. You know, they don't want people saying they're gay, so they'll throw, you know, a little piece at you once in a while. And it's never great, and, you know, it's never like they think, well, I'm doing everything I can to satisfy you. But, and maybe they are, but it falls so short because they can't satisfy you.
Yeah, well, they don't know how, and I still remember before, or about the time we got married, you know that cooking book that's been out for years and years and years, The Joy of Cooking?
Right.
There was... Just before we got married in the late 70s, there was a book called The Joy of Sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a spin-off on The Joy of Cooking kind of thing. Like, you know, like what she expects, what he expects, and, you know, the whole thing. And so I still remember him reading that. It was almost like he wanted to read it cover to cover. It was almost like an instruction book for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was strange. He wanted me to read it, and I go, I don't need to read a book. I know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I didn't understand him needing to read that book.
Sally, do you know if he had any girlfriends prior to the time you got married?
I didn't hear the first part of that question.
Do you know if he had any girlfriends before you got married?
Yeah, there was one. He went to Oregon State University in Corvallis, and and I told you he has a degree in chemistry, and so there was a study group that they were all chemistry majors, and they would study together. And one of the gals from this group, I know he dated for quite a while, but I don't really know why they split up.
Uh-huh. Well, probably because she didn't want to stay with him anymore.
Yeah.
No, she was probably on to him, and he probably wasn't fulfilling any of her needs, so why stay with him?
Yeah. I don't know. Because, in, you know, like I said in the beginning, you'd think he was normal. He really did.
Well, maybe she was with him intimately and knew that he wasn't.
Yeah, I don't know. And later, when we were in Germany, she passed away. She got, was in an accident, hit a semi-truck or something.
Uh-huh.
And she passed away. So, you know, I never did have a chance to talk with her.
Uh-huh.
I know that those chemistry friends of his, they were friends of his for many years.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of like, did you feel that you were in two different worlds at all times?
Yeah, like I said in the beginning, when we were first married for several years, he was pretty good. I mean, I really didn't have, just like I said, fleeting moments of just odd things he'd say, but then you just kind of recoup and go on. Yeah, I mean, it was okay in the beginning. I mean, I didn't have too much to complain about, but it was just a gradual deterioration, a little bit every year. And especially noted when my daughter was born. That's a 5-year point.
Was he controlling, Dolly?
Oh, he was very controlling.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. He was very, I mean, not so much that from what I've heard where, you know, they don't let you go out or, you know, have friends or that type of thing. But his control was circumstantial in that because we moved so often, I didn't have friends because of the mobility of other, of us, not only us, but other Air Force people too. I mean, they would go a year or two at this base or that, and then off they go again. And so maybe that was all built into his little system, you know, where he can keep me moving and I don't have any long-term friends to kind of chat with and have them, you know, it's almost like he was afraid of me comparing notes to somebody
uh-huh.
else.
Right.
And,
Well, that's how they are.
Yeah.
So tell us what happened, you know, as the years progressed, you moved from one country to the next, you went to Saudi Arabia, and how long were you there?
We were just there 1 year in Saudi, and then, like I said, we were evacuated. And the kids and I went to Las Vegas and got an apartment for 1 year by ourselves. And we chose that place because it was warm. It had lots to do. And his brother was stationed at Nellis Air Force Base. And my ex and I thought, well, you know, spend a year near them. And the kids can play with each other, get
uh-huh.
to know each other. So we did that. But as it turns out, we didn't spend a lot of time with them.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, after that year went by, my ex had to stay behind in Saudi for the full 2 years.
Right.
Because that was his tour. So then we moved back into our house in Albuquerque. And we had this big house built. I mean, it was so weird, Bonnie, because we had this custom home built, 3,000 square foot, beautiful, brand new home. And in a year, he says he's going to moved to Saudi Arabia for 2 years. But why did we have this nice home built if you're going to be off moving again? And you know what the weird thing was? Because he was
what?
A lieutenant colonel then.
Oh.
And there was a general at Kirtland who Larry liked, and he knew that this general would promote him to full colonel.
Huh.
And yet, that's what I told her. I said, why would you move to Saudi when you know full colonel is in the bag for you if you stay here?
And
he said, I could be promoted in Saudi. And since I'm not in the Air Force, I didn't know anything about it. Well, we get to Saudi, and the two-star general over there wanted to promote him, but he couldn't because if your Air Force friends would know, or Army too, there's a thing called a DP,
mm-hmm.
which it stands for definitely promote.
Right.
And generals are rationed these. Not every general gets, a certain amount of DPs to give out to their people. And the general who my ex-husband worked for in Saudi didn't have any to give out. And so he didn't get full colonel. But the two-star general actually flew from Saudi Arabia to where the board meets in Washington, D.C.,
right.
to ask personally for the promotion for him. And he was still denied it.
And what was the reason he was denied?
I'm sorry, you're not coming over very clear on my phone. I'm sorry.
Sorry, what was the reason why he was denied?
Because there was the general over there didn't have a DP.
Mm-hmm.
And his clout just, they basically just went on DPs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the general was just hoping that they would make an exception, but they didn't. So that's why he wasn't promoted, basically, because I knew this. I knew about the DPs, and I knew that they're rationed, and I knew that some generals get them, and I know some generals get 1, 2, 3, 4, however big their unit is, depends on how many DPs they are rationed to give out. And
mm-hmm.
because in Saudi it was a small group, he didn't have any. But I told my ex, when he said we're going to Saudi, I said, why do you want to do that? I said, you have full colonel in the bag right here. We have a brand new house. See what I'm saying? Things just did not add up.
They weren't adding up, and yet you couldn't put your finger on it, right?
Yeah. It's like he was doing crazy things, and you're the smart person. He's a smart person. Why is a smart person doing stupid things?
So I guess you just didn't have anything to really go on. Is that what you kind of felt like? You just couldn't pinpoint. You knew something was wrong, but you didn't know what it was.
Well, and, you know, sometimes I would just tell, it doesn't make sense. Why is this? Why is that? And for some reason, he made it feel like, made me feel like
you're stupid,
I shouldn't
right?
raise, like, yeah, like I shouldn't raise the question.
Mm-hmm. Like, why are you questioning him?
Yeah.
Was he missing a lot of the time, Dolly?
Oh, he was gone a lot. I remember
mm-hmm.
I remember the full colonel's wife, Joyce is her name. I met her in Saudi. Her husband was my husband's boss, and we were friends after we left Saudi. We still are. We call each other still.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one who, you know, after the kids and I were evacuated, and she's the one. I told him the one day that he asked me for the divorce. I called her right away.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know what she said? Ask him if he's gay.
Wow.
I thought, wow, that's out of the blue. Why would you want me to ask him if he's gay? She says, just do it. See what he says.
Now, did you suspect that at that point?
No. I thought she was off the mark. I thought, no, this is crazy. But
mm-hmm.
because she's a good friend, I'll ask, you know. And so I asked him. And I asked him, are you gay? And he said, ha, no. So I called her right back. I asked him. He said no. And you know what she said to me? He's lying.
Mm-hmm.
He's lying. Because you know what? After you and the kids left Saudi, she was still there because her kids had grown. She didn't have any kids over there, so she didn't have to be evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have to be evacuated, so she stayed behind with her husband. And so after the kids and I left, she observed him walk. She says, I like to watch people, and I've watched him walk. And she said, you know what? She said, it wasn't obvious when you and the kids were there, but the minute you left, that's when I knew.
Hmm. So was there anything else that tipped her off, do you think?
She just, like she said, she observed people, and she just watched the way he walked. And then I had another friend in Albuquerque who I also called and said, you know, told that he wanted a divorce. And she's the same way. She said, ask him if he's gay. She says, I know he's gay. Matter of fact, I think that's what I'm dealing with here, too. Turns out her husband was gay, too.
Wow. That was a little unique. But, you know, let me ask your opinion on something, just to divert for a minute. You know, there's so much news that came down in the last couple of months about, you know, with the military removing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that, you know, you're not legally allowed to do that anymore. Do you think that with this change in status on that policy, a lot of military men who are gay won't feel the need to rush to get married?
Well, in that case, you just have to look at the general population as a whole. If it happens in the general population, I just don't see a reason why they would have to marry straight, you know, whether it's the gay woman or the gay man. You know, they would not have a reason to marry a straight person anymore. But it still, as you know, it still happens in the general population. So it will continue to happen in the military as well. Maybe it's just, you know, there's like, there's certain groups. I mean, Marines, come on. If they found out you're gay, oh my goodness. Don't ask, don't tell, or whatever. They're gonna give you a bad time.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about you a few weeks ago when I read this article, and I don't know if you saw it in People magazine. After the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was passed, like the following week, they interviewed this officer in the service, but I have to admit I don't remember which branch it was. And, you know, he came out as being gay, and he has a wife and children, and I guess after the ruling came down, that's when he felt safe enough to announce it. Now, his wife didn't have any idea that he was gay.
No.
You know, there was nothing that indicated to her that he was gay.
And I still wonder if the reason we moved around so much wasn't to hide himself, too. Maybe people at one base would kind of start suspecting, and he, you know, has
that's
the idea.
That's very possible.
He needs to get out of here now. And then maybe that's why he went to Saudi. Maybe, you know, and then he worked, after he got out of the Air Force, after he retired, he went to work for a government contract company. And he needed to have not just a secret clearance, but a top secret clearance. And in order to have a top secret clearance, everybody you know has to be run through the mill. You know, even they even wanted my deceased parents' social security numbers.
Wow.
And, you know, that kind of thing. And so the top secret clearance is really something. And so when the, what they call it, the...
The
Secret Investigative Services is what it was.
Right.
Called me after they heard that we were divorcing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was right at the time I just found out he was gay. And so they called and said, we were just curious why you were divorcing. Whose idea was it to divorce?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, in the beginning, a couple months ago, it was his idea. But I recently found out he's gay, and so it's all fine with me now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they
were they surprised when you said that?
They were. They said, well, we didn't expect to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, yeah, I know. And, you know, I could tell the the number. Give him the phone number and the name of the guy he's involved
mm-hmm.
with. And they said, well, see, we have a problem. Not so much we have a problem with he's gay. See, we have a problem that he's a closeted gay because he could possibly be in a position of blackmail. And when
mm-hmm.
you have a top secret clearance, government clearance, you don't want anyone to be in a position of blackmail.
Right.
And so what they did, you know, was call him to say, look, there's two ways you can do this. You can stay in your closet, but you'll lose your top secret clearance and so your job.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can come out and tell everybody you know, your friends, family, acquaintances, everybody, that you're gay. And you can keep your top secret clearance. And so that's what he did.
That's
but
really
I still
crazy,
don't
isn't it?
Think he would ever admit it unless he was pressured into doing so, like what he was done, you know, pressured into doing.
I think that sounds kind of like bizarre. Like if you keep it a secret, you're fired. But if you tell everybody,
yeah.
we'll keep you.
Yeah.
What do you think, Misty?
Yeah, I'm trying to wrap my head around that one, too. I don't understand that one either.
I maybe I'm missing something, but I mean,
no,
I've
no,
heard
no.
it's a Dolly story, but, you know, I can never understand it.
I don't
And is
either.
It because Dolly didn't want to have somebody have something there to blackmail him with? Was that the rationale, or two?
Well, for his knowledge, I mean, he had access to the F-21 or F-22, whatever that brand-new fighter jet was.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew stuff that was secret that the government didn't want public.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes
and,
one more sense. Okay, I see what you're saying now. Okay. So
yeah,
they didn't want
so if,
I'm,
if someone found out,
account.
Maybe the Russians, I don't know who, you know, wanted to find out for their country, you know, what's so special about this fighter? What does it have on it?
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him, and he knew. And he could tell them just to keep them quiet.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying, blackmail.
Yeah. Well, now that he openly, so now everybody knew openly, like his family and everyone?
Yeah, surprisingly enough. Yeah, his friends were okay with it.
About his family?
His family, from talking to his brother and sister-in-law, their basic thing, I told them, I said, he used me as his cover. And
mm-hmm.
their response was, he's still Mike's brother.
Yeah,
so
and that's what I tell women. Blood is really always thicker than water in almost every case. Don't you think so? That these guys' families, you know, they stick up for their sons.
Yeah.
I found that. How about you, Misty? Do you find that usually happening?
Yeah, and it's really sad because sometimes these women are very, very close to the husband's or ex-husband's side of the family. And,
right.
And it's very hurtful to lose those members of the family that you care and love as well. So it,
yeah.
it does usually boil down to that.
Yeah.
And I
mean,
that
the mother.
A lot.
The mother didn't know. The sister didn't know, the brother didn't know. And I asked the brother when I talked to Mike, I said, well, so how did you find out? When did you find out? And he said, well, right when you did, because he had to come out right away to keep his clearance.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that Larry took him to breakfast, and he was in the middle of a swig of coffee, and he told him he was gay, and he about blurted it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the brother told me. So, his family didn't know until they were told.
Mm-hmm. So now, let me ask you this. When you eventually moved back to Washington, correct?
Yes. Then he decided to move to Washington. Where were we? We went to Southern California. That's right. We went to Southern California, and he worked with Edwards Air Force Base there. And we lived there for a year and a half or so. And then all of a sudden he decided, well, I want to move back to Washington. And this way we'll get a permanent home, and the kids, Annie, can go to college there, and we don't have to move every year or two. Mark can go to the same grade school and high school, and I'll just commute. You can just drive me to the airport and every week and come home on the weekends, and I'll just commute to Las Vegas. So that's where he was working at that time. And he was, it's just his schedule. I mean, I have to look at all the days, all the dates and where we were and when over all these years. And it's just, they all ran into each other. But he decided to move back up to Washington and get a permanent home, and then he could commute and by plane, which I thought was idiotic because we lived an hour and a half from the airport.
Wow.
Why would he pick a place closer to his family and closer to the airport?
How were his interactions with your children during those years?
Aloof, just like me. He wasn't home. He had no relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
They just,
when
we would travel, we would go on a cruise or something, and we had a condo timeshare in Las Vegas and one in Hawaii, and we would do that maybe two or three times a year, and then otherwise he was on the go back and forth, and just really didn't have a relationship with him.
Did you feel a sense of emptiness and loneliness even though you were still married?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I think I had no roots anywhere, because of all the constant moving, I had no friends.
Mm-hmm.
And friends would come and go. In my whole life, friends just have always just come and gone. I've had them a year or two, and then we'd always move and then lose contact. And, you know, I think that was the worst thing, because, you know, he wasn't around, and we were here, you know, one year and there another, and I didn't have a place to be grounded, and which would have been okay if my, you know, emotional needs and would have been met, and if I felt loved.
Well, that's a good point. You know, when nothing's being met and you just keep getting shifted around and shuffled around and ignored, you know, you lose a sense of who you are. You don't even have a sense anymore.
I still don't, because my son and I moved into this house here that used to be my mom and dad's, and sure enough, that guy knew exactly what he was going to do many years ago, because it was like maybe 10 years ago, we hooked up, we had a well, and it was a problem, and we had to pay $5,000 to hook up to city water, and you know, it had just been one time after another. I said, can we just sell that house and get rid of it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just being a money hole. And he says, no, because you never know what might happen and we might need it. And that's one of those, what does that mean?
Exactly.
All, you know, the constant, he was keeping me off guard, just throwing stuff like that at me all the time without explaining anything. And I think that was what was almost driving me crazy, because nothing made sense. Nothing he said made sense. Nothing he did made sense. My whole life didn't make sense.
And would you say he was, you know, like when you found out about his boyfriend, he still was the same guy, right?
You know, I don't know. And my daughter knows, but I don't talk about him with her, nor does she talk about him with me. So I don't know.
Well,
I don't know anything about it.
Your kids don't know?
I'm sorry?
How about your children? Do they know?
You mean if he's still with his boyfriend?
Right.
My daughter would know, because she this past summer stayed overnight with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a topic that I don't bring up with her, because she's uncomfortable talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't go there. I just don't even ask. My son doesn't know anything, because he doesn't talk to his dad at all.
Mm-hmm.
He emails him. My ex sends him some money every month. And he'll email him. As a matter of fact, I don't know if he'd do it if I didn't tell him to. Every month I tell my son, you got to email him and thank him for the money he sends you every month. So he does that. And that's the relationship.
Right, but that's your son's choice, right?
Yeah, and...
It's not that you discourage him from having a relationship.
He said something to me the other day about his boyfriend, and he wonders if he's still with him or something. I said, you know what, if you're curious enough, then, you know, that's between you and your father. And to this day, he hates it when I refer to him as his dad. I've been trained now to refer to him as his father.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I told him. I said that your relationship with your father is what you want it to be, whatever you want. But he said, you know, he didn't care about me. I didn't feel, you know, even when he was a kid, how old was he? He was maybe 10 years old or something. And my son said something when my ex's mom was visiting. This was in childhood innocence. He just said to her, my mom loves me. And she said to him, oh, your daddy loves you too. And then my son and I looked at each other and like, he does? And so
that got me thinking.
Well, that got me thinking, and I said to, how do you know that I love you? You told your grandma that my mom loves me. I said, how do you know that I love you? And he said, because I feel it. And I said, well, what about your dad? Do you think your dad loves you? And he said, well, he says so, but I don't feel it.
And about how old was he then?
About 10.
Well, he was very perceptive. But I always say that children know what's going on. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
Absolutely. I think that they know, they sense something. And, you know, you can do it in their own language. There's always an appropriate language to tell them in. I think it can be damaging to lie to children. I think children need to know what's going on in their age-appropriate language because they sense things. Even a newborn, you know, can sense things. A newborn can sense the fussiness at home, and they will actually be more fussy themselves. You know, children pick up on that stuff. They're very, very perceptive of things such as that. Very perceptive.
They are.
It's like when women tell me, well, you know, they don't know we're having problems, and we don't say anything in front of them. But, you know, it's not a matter that you have to talk verbally to figure out there's a problem. It's all the body language involved.
Right.
And there's a, you know, it's the whole emotional effect that the air in the room is, you know, never quite right. You know, children know when something's wrong. Now, they may not know exactly what's wrong. I'm not saying they know that their fathers are gay.
That's correct.
They do know that something's wrong in that marriage, and they internalize that the problem is them.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell women, that don't think for one minute that, you know, these kids don't know that something is really wrong within that marriage. You know, they're not thinking it's because of, you know, something else. They think that they're part of that problem.
Yeah. Well, my son has always been very shy, and it's always been very hard for him to make friends. And I'm sure that is all part of it because of the brokenness of his family, and my husband, with my son growing up in this home, never felt he by his own words never felt loved by him, and I just thought we were ornaments for the house just to keep it running for him. That's how I felt. My role was to keep the kids, you know, going to school, fed, clothed, take them to the dentist, to the doctor. And that was my role, and that was it. Take care of the house, maid, mom, you know, that was it.
Well, so when did your story with your ex end?
You know what? I would like to say it's ended, but it still hasn't.
Right.
He's been very good. He's been very good with giving me the alimony every month, but until I sell this house, I don't feel that I'm out from his control.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why. Because he kept this house as a rental against
right.
my wishes of selling it when before the market crashed. We could have made a lot of money on this house.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to sell it, but he wouldn't sign. And over the years of it being a rental for 23 years, I have had to put about $60,000 into
wow.
it. $10,000 for a new roof, $10,000
mm-hmm.
to clean up the inside of the house after the smoking tenants left,
mm-hmm.
with a new carpet and new window coverings. Even I had to buy new double-pane windows because the house was built in the 70s. I even had to put a new driveway in because the driveway had sunk over the years, and whenever it rained, half of it would fill up with water. I've had landscaping I've had to do that was, it just added up to $60,000. And by golly, he had not kept this house up on purpose because he knew he was going to divorce me.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't care.
Yeah. And so he took the tax write-off on this rental for all those years and
mm-hmm.
depreciated it all along. And so now it will be this coming year in May, 2 years since he signed the quit claim deed over to me. In
uh-huh.
other words, that's the first time that I will be able to sell this house for what I don't know now. But it will be the first time I'll be able to sell it without strings attached because I have to live in it for 2 years tax-wise to not pay capital gains after it being a rental for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And with his name off the deed. So until I can get out of here and get on with my own life, you know, I feel the saga is still continuing until I'm out of his control. And I just feel this house is still part of his control because I was not able to. He didn't allow me to sell it when I wanted to.
Well, I think that's really true. And I think that once you have everything resolved, you will start to feel better. But I do want to say, and I think Misty can concur, and I've read Dolly's story. I've known her story. I've known Dolly and love Dolly. But I've known her story, for a long time. And it's, I'm sure very difficult to talk about it, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it brings up a lot
It's still very painful and raw.
Yeah.
How many years was it, Dolly?
The divorce was final in 2009. We got married in 1979, so 30 years.
Wow.
Right. It's a lifetime.
It's a lifetime. Yeah,
it's a lifetime of constant abuse, confusion.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say that I think Misty will agree with me. Your case, you really have to read it to see how horrifying it really is. And, we're going to skip over a lot of it because it is so painful, but in the book Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Volume 2, Dolly's story is in there, full story. And I do feel, though, that your husband or ex-husband was somewhat unique because a lot of these guys go into these marriages filled with hope that they're going to work. And they really do try, at least in the beginning for the most part. I'm not saying for long term. But then there are some who just have, no good intentions. And even, Misty comes from a marriage where there was a lot of domestic violence. But it really didn't start out that way, right, Misty?
No, it became that way quickly, but it didn't start out that way. It didn't. Mm-mm.
Yeah, where I think Dolly's was really a clear case where he never said he loved you, right, Dolly?
No, never did.
And tell people how he asked to marry you.
Yeah, he took me out to dinner at a nice restaurant in Seattle, and he had a ring in a little, holder, opened the little box, and asked me, "So what do you think of this?" I said, "Well, it's very beautiful." And I'm thinking, are you going to ask me to marry you or what? and so nothing came, and that, and it was just like, so what do you think of this, the ring?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's very beautiful, and he says, I've grown to care for you deeply.
Mm-hmm. And that's about as close as to I love you as you ever got, right?
Yeah, exactly. That he worded it very, very carefully. And I just thought he was shy. I just thought he was nervous about the proposal and didn't know.
Or you thought he was one of those intellectual chemists and they didn't express themselves in the same way, right?
Yeah, exactly. They weren't as emotional as other people. You've seen the Big Bang Theory, and you know what's funny about that is that one character, it happens to be gay in real life, but it's the same thing, the way he's acting on that with other women. It's like, oh, bother, you know, do I have to cuddle you? Do I have to, you know, his friend who's a girl but is not his girlfriend, you know, that kind of thing. And I go, dang, you know, this show is crazy because he's obviously gay, but they're not acknowledging it.
Well, I think another thing that I'd like to bring up with you, because a lot of times I think that women really beat themselves up. Let's go back for one moment to that time when, you know, we said that he would never say he loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at most you got, well, I think I'm fond of you or whatever the case is. And a lot of women also have been in that very similar position, and they say, how stupid could I have been? I should have known something was wrong. And now I'll make a confession. You know, I really feel stupid saying this too. But I was going with a guy before I married my ex-husband. You know, he was a doctor. He became an oncologist. We were high school, you know, sweethearts to a point. But there was always something cold and aloof about him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't know anything about gay. That certainly never entered my mind at that point. But even when I went back with him, and there was always something distant and missing.
Yeah.
And you know what it is? Like, I was 26 or 27, like, how much did I know anyway? So
mm-hmm.
I would say, well, he was a Cancer, you know, that was his sign. And then I'd be looking up the zodiac signs, trying to find out what's wrong with him. And then
mm-hmm.
they would say, well, Cancers or men are usually, you know, not real affectionate or this or that. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I wrote it off to, as silly as that sounds and how ridiculous it sounds. But,
well,
you know, back
I can
those
see
days,
that. I can see that, because that's what I would be doing the same thing, too, just because I knew my brother was kind of the same way. He wasn't able to show affection, and so I just chalked it up to that, you know, oh, well, it's okay, you know, that's the way they are.
Yep, we look to make excuses all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's
yeah,
part
but you
of
know, it was funny, what hit home with that was, I remember watching an Oprah show, and Dina McGreevy was on when, you know, that her husband came out
uh-huh.
as having, being gay. And she was talking to Oprah about how he had proposed to her. And you know what? It was the same thing. She said, I have this ring and I care for you deeply. I go, oh my goodness. Those are the exact words and exactly what he did. What do you think about this ring? And I remember her saying the same thing. Oh, it's very beautiful.
I just want to ask you one more question, not to throw you
mm-hmm.
off track here, but a lot of times when women come on, you know, our show or they're part of our support chat, I often hear the comment that they make that, oh, everybody thought we were such a happy couple. Nobody could believe it. Do you think anybody thought you two were happy as a couple?
No, not as a couple, but the deception came in, he read a lot. He did a lot of reading. And in, you know, social circles with my family, whenever they would visit, he was the center of attention. He controlled the dinner conversation because he was so interesting.
Uh-huh.
And so everyone thought, you know, everyone liked him because he was so interesting, you know, whatever he had to say. People just were, you know, amazed at his intelligence. And and how much he knew about a little bit about everything. And I sat there. You know, he was engaging the others in conversation, and I never entered in the conversation. As a matter of fact, when I did, if I ever said something that wasn't factual or close to not being, he would be right there and correct me. He would not let anything slide. Or
very
if I
controlling and condescending.
Oh, yeah. Arrogant and condescending is right. But everybody loved him. He could handle any dinner conversation there was.
But you feel that overall he was isolating to you, trying to keep you away from anything.
You know, and act like, you know, during the dinner conversation that he was a very likable person. But then we'd get home and nothing. You know, I didn't get that lively conversation at home.
Exactly.
I got being ignored and criticized at home.
It was like, unbelievable. Well, anyway, Dolly, I can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. And
you're welcome.
Can you give some advice to women who are in this situation? What would you tell them?
Oh, compare notes with your friends who are happily married, and help them you see that what you are experiencing is not normal. Take yourself out of what you think is normal into another scope of what truly is normal, and you're only going to be able to do that when you have friends to surround you who have normal relationships.
I think that's so true. What do you think, Misty?
Absolutely. I'm going to go back to something she touched on, and I would call that like a support system. You have to, you know, have that you try.
I'm sorry, you have to what?
People that you trust. Hello? Can you hear me?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Misty.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
And she just broke up.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Misty.
Oh, dear. Okay.
All right, well, lucky for you, we're ending the show anyway.
Okay.
And we're doing it because you're running out of time with your phone. But that's okay. But, Dolly, I appreciate so much you coming on our show. And,
and a big thank you to you, Bonnie, for helping me see the light. When I just found out that my ex was gay and I found you online, you were my light to help me see that what I was experiencing was not normal.
Right, and yours is beyond not normal. Yours was never normal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess I make that connection with you because I just feel that, you know, I'm one of those kind of women who was, you know, strong to start with and beaten down within a short amount of time. And you just see so much that when you don't have the support that you need from a man who loves you the way you need to be loved, how it just zaps every kind of thought out of your mind. And, you know, I was lucky that mine was a short-term marriage, but you had 30 years of this.
Afraid to leave because I didn't have any friends or family for that support to go to. I didn't have anywhere to go.
Exactly. And so you were so stuck in this muck. But
thankfully,
you took your life back, and it takes a long time to recover. That's another thing I just would like for you to mention before we go. You know, it doesn't happen in a few months or a couple of years when you have all those years of being damaged. Would you agree with that?
Well, the longer you're in that type of situation, the longer it's going to take you to come out of it. And you know what? He left me... he left me in October 06, and he asked for the divorce at that time, too. And the divorce was final not until January of 09.
Mm-hmm.
And it amazes me, even to this day, I'm frozen. I don't know what to do.
Right. And that's something that will have to change slowly over time, because there is no quick fix to getting better. You know, it's
yeah.
a slow climb. And eventually, you know, things start getting better, and every day gets a little bit better, but it's a long period. And if you don't get the help for yourself or the support, you know, then it's really a much longer journey.
It is. The longer you're in it, the longer it takes.
Yes. But, you know, you're on your way.
Yeah.
Maybe
on my
way. Maybe you'll have to move out here with me, Dolly.
I'm sorry, that broke up to me, Bonnie.
I said maybe you'll have to move here to Philadelphia with me.
Oh, no, I would love to, but I'm also, I don't like the cold and hot. I like the comfortable, cool, and not so hot summers.
Yeah, I like those too. I'm going to have to find one someday. I might have to move out there with you instead.
How about that? That would be great. we have mild winters and summers are in the 70s, so that's cool.
That sounds really good to me, and I think Misty would like that too.
That sounds really good. Make room for two.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Dolly, thanks so much again, and I hope you'll be willing to join us, you know, again in a few months, because I know that when women hear you, they just feel so encouraged and inspired.
Oh, sure. Anytime, Bonnie.
All right. Thanks, you know,
Dolly.
I love you.
I love you, too, both of you.
All right,
take
sweetie.
Care.
You too.
All right,
love
thanks
you.
So much.
Thank you for inviting me to the
Oh, don't worry.
Trip
we'll be inviting you again. I'm pushing you to come back.
Okay.
All
take
right,
care.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Misty, wasn't that a very inspiring story?
Absolutely. As always, they are. And it's wonderful that some of the women are coming on that are part of your book so people can hear the stories, the differences. There's so many similarities, but there's always the differences as well. And I'm sure that her story has touched many hearts out there, that some women can really identify with this, with her
mm-hmm.
story. And it's just so sad, you know, 30 years of dedicating yourself to someone, you know, love, support, your roots.
3 decades of allowing yourself to just be used.
Yeah.
You know, and just not knowing where to turn because you get so paralyzed in these relationships.
Right.
And they're so mentally exhausting.
Oh,
you know, it's like you're constantly looking on, you know, how you're being tripped up and walking on the eggshells and looking to mm-hmm. see, you know, because, you know, these guys do a lot of gay, you know, what we call gay lighting.
Gay lighting, yeah.
And, you know, you get confused and you're in turmoil all the time with your mind. But I think it's the mental exhaustion that just, you know, really makes it so much worse.
Confusion.
Because you never know, you know, what's reality, what's not reality.
Right. You live in a state of confusion. And that's exhausting.
Exactly.
It's unpredictable
exactly.
and exhausting. When the human mind doesn't know what to predict or, you know, live in some type of stable environment, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm. It's like living in a dark hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
well,
so
thankfully,
sad.
Dolly is out of hers. And once again, it just takes time to really climb out after you've been in such a bad place for so long. Like any other kind of survival, you know, you just have to take one day at a time until you're able to build yourself up. But to all of our women who are listening and also our men out there who are supporting us, because we do have some wonderful, you know, gay men out there who are part of our network
mm-hmm.
who really do try to give us the support that we need and do the right thing. And so to all of you, you know, men who encourage us, we really appreciate it too. Dolly was one of those rarities who really had a husband who never really loved her from the beginning at all. He was just using her to protect himself in the armed services.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there are other women who are in that situation because I hear from them quite often.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not alone, that you're not stupid, that you weren't the ones who, you know, allowed yourself for this to happen. You know, this is just part of the nature of how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need support, Misty and I are here for you. We have our support chat. If you need one-on-one, just write to me. And once again, it's bondk@aol.com. And please check out Misty's beautiful website. Tell them about you, Misty, where they can reach you.
They can reach me at mistyhall.com, MistyHall.com. Tell you a little bit about my services, and there's a contact page on there as well. And I'm here for you if you need the help.
Okay. Well, Misty, I think we had a wonderful show.
We did.
I'll let you sign off first.
Okay. Good night and love to all. Have a beautiful week.
And, yes, have a wonderful week. And you too, Misty. And we'll be back with you next Sunday night. Bye, everybody.
Bye.